a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
Hey, good morning. Welcome to the end of week three of the legislature. My name is David Lust. I'm the majority leader in the House, and with me is Senator Ray, the majority leader in the Senate. Week three was a pretty active week. We're now starting to get in more of the meat of the session. The first couple weeks tend to be less active since there's fewer bills making it through committee, and now we're getting to a point where bills are making it through the committee. We're having, at least we in the House, are having extensive discussion on bills every afternoon. I think what I would like to talk about briefly is something that's really not legislative related, at least not yet, and that is the results of two of the three audits that the governor asked on the EB-5 program. Then those came down yesterday, and the governor shared those immediately, as well as the feedback from both the governor's the economic development and other input as well. So I've looked at the audit reports and was pleased to see there's nothing dramatic in the reports. It seems to be a lot more of administrative minor lapses in documentation, which in looking at the response from GOED and others have been rectified. They've gone back and obtained some of the documentation, the backup documentation that was not initially provided, and the audits properly identified. So I think that's I'm sure a sigh of relief for both the governor and the governor's Office of Economic Development that there was nothing glaring in those audits. I've looked at audits before, and these are not inconsistent with what you would see with any business audit. There are administrative lapses here and there on documentation, and that was refreshing to see that's the extent of it. In the House, we've seemed to have been spending a lot of, and one more follow-up on that matter, we've indicated in legislative procedure and leadership on both the Democrat side and the Republican side have discussed what we're going to do, what the legislature is going to do with these audits. We are going to have the Committee on Government Operations and Audit, a legislative committee, review these audits, spend some time on them, bring in testimony from GOED as well as the auditors themselves, and really drill down into more detail on what items they've identified in these audits. And that will also occur when we get the legislative audit report back. So we will be very active as a legislature in reviewing these audits and the entire process from soup to nuts, and we will continue those hearings, I would assume, over the next several months. So that's the legislative plan for the EB-5 audits and review of that program. In the House, we've been spending considerable time on resolutions for anyone who's been paying attention, ranging from auditing the Federal Reserve to Common Core and immigration, and certainly some could argue that we spend an inordinate amount of time on something that doesn't have a large impact, but we allow that debate to occur. It's a healthy debate. Certainly seems to be quite active in some sectors, but we've done that, and we've done a host of other bills each day this week, and it's been good. It's nice to get into the rhythm of the session where you're getting bills and have consistent work for us to do. And that's kind of the report on the House side.
Okay. Thanks, David. I'm going to do a talk about the House, Senate, and the governor. As I mentioned in our first news conference early on this session, we have been discussing Medicaid expansion at some level. And as I had specified at that time, those discussions were ongoing. Representative Lust, myself, the governor, other members of leadership in the Republican side have been talking at length about how we could find a common sense, conservative approach to Medicaid expansion. We're pleased to announce today the governor will be sending a letter to Kathleen Sebelius requesting that she be open to letting us draft a waiver to address the needs of our most needy working South Dakotans. Would deal directly with those folks under 100% of poverty, Again, just to clarify, those folks between 100 and 138% of poverty do have an option to enter the portal on the website and access through the Affordable Care Act. So strongly would encourage those folks to utilize that utilize that option to get insurance. So this letter would really, we're just asking the Secretary to allow us to work together to come up with a plan that would address the needs of those most needy South Dakotans. Again, it's never been a lack of compassion. Those of you that know the governor know he's a very compassionate man and concerned about those folks, as we are. And we want to make sure that everyone has access to health care, but we also want to make sure that that's something that can be maintained going forward. And so we've been very thoughtful about that through the process. And I believe that we've come up with a fairly good approach and are looking forward to that discussion moving forward. I'm sure you'll hear about it in the next two press conferences that follow. So with that, the Senate load has actually been pretty light. We've had not a lot of bills debated on the floor. If you've been paying attention, we're typically averaging a strong one or two a day. So it's been a little slow. I do think that will pick up in the next week. Committees are starting to become a little more active on our side. So with that, I think I'll close, and certainly I suspect there'll be some questions. So
Nate with South Dakota Public Broadcasting. Either of you guys can really answer this question here for us, but you know, what areas of concern this session don't have bills prepared yet?
I'm sorry, could you repeat the question?
What areas of concern, like with some of the issues, don't maybe have bills prepared yet?
Well, I think, Nate, probably it wouldn't be fair to ask that question until next week after the final bills are dropped. I still know that on the Senate side, we have unlimited bill drop as of yet 11 o'clock today. So you'll probably see a fistful of bills going yet this morning. I know the House is still, as we will be tomorrow or through Tuesday, in our final three. So there's still a lot of bills hanging out there. I think most of the general things that I think Representative Lust and I can think of are covered in some bill, and we've actually obviously put in a couple of title bills to address anything that may arise later on. So I think most of the issues are covered, unless you think of something I can't.
No, I think that's accurate. There's as you've seen, a number of bills just coming from State Affairs Committee with wide range of issues, and this year's no different than any other year. There's a title on a lot of the pertinent and relevant subjects that are debated in the public.
Sure.
Kathy Bartlett with SDPB. This year, lawmakers on both sides were talking about how schools were impacted, you know, by the funding cuts in 2011. And then, you know, it's been emphasized that that's kind of the new level to expect and everything. And so this session, are there bills that take on some changes to the state's education funding that kind of shift away from those funding cut levels?
Well, we had a summer study group that was focused on education funding and examining what issues could be addressed there. Several things came out of that summer study, but I don't believe there's going to be anything that's going to fundamentally alter the formula or how we fund education. There certainly are bills, and there's one the House Education Committee passed and it was referred to appropriations concerning the level of education funding. And that's a debate that occurs every session from the first day to the last day, whether it's one-time money or money in the formula. And that's generally the issue around which education funding centers, is the amount, not the process or the procedure or the formula.
Yeah, I think just to dovetail onto that, I think that's why we come back every year. And this year is a perfect example. Let's say that I believe it's a 2% floor for funding for education. Well, This year, the governor has put together in his proposal, and I think it has broad support, would be a fair statement, a 3% raise for education. And it could have been 1.6 had we gone with the CPI. And so, you know, I think it's our responsibility to come here every year and have those discussions about how much money do we have? How much money do we anticipate we're going to have? Are we going to run into any bumps in the road? And then thoughtfully move through that process and go, gosh, yeah, this year we actually, as you know, statute says 1.6, we're probably looking at 3.0, or, you know, depending on how the numbers come out at the end, maybe a little bit more. And so, and on the flip side, and actually I think somebody pointed out in testimony in the House committee this morning, if I read correctly, but they said, well, gosh, the legislators, they said it somewhat despairingly, the legislators cut funding for education. They don't even care what the law says. Well, you know what? We did have some tough times a couple years ago and made some tough decisions. And so had we had that 2% floor in, they wouldn't have probably got it. So, every year is different. There's different dynamics, and that's why we come back here and have these discussions. So I think the reality of the situation is you just see what you have when you come in and move forward.
Thank you.
I guess so far compared to other years, what's your guys' overall general view on this session so far? I know we've only been in it about 3 weeks, but how is your guys' feeling so far moving forward through this session?
I think pretty good. Last year we had a lot of discussion and debate about the Senate Bill 235, the Building South Dakota package, and so it seemed like there was some excitement and energy revolving around that. There just hasn't been a lot of huge issues this year, and certainly I think probably in large part due to the proposed budget with 3% for the education, 3% for state employees, 3% for providers, healthcare providers, and everybody is kind of going, well, I'm okay with that budget. And so, of course, that's the big item we deal with. And then just the other bills that go along with that. I think there's a lot yet to be dropped. I think you're going to see some stuff come in these next couple of days. And, you know, I guess we're Representative Lust and I are fairly pleased with the letter that will be going out to, you know, looking at some common sense solutions to Medicaid expansion and whether see where that goes. Looking forward to those discussions and debates. So, overall, I think it's been pretty, knock on wood, pretty good session so far.
Yeah, I would add to that. There's a couple outliers this session that you don't typically have. Normally, a session kind of coalesces around a big issue. Last year was economic development. A couple years ago was House Bill 1234, the education reform bill. This year, you've got certainly Common Core has consumed a lot of time early in the session, and will continue to do so, I'm sure. But you've got the Medicaid expansion issue, which is kind of non-legislative in the sense that the governor's is pursuing a path with our support and approval, and then also this the audit issue, the EB-5 issue, not things that are going to necessarily result in legislation or be impactful immediately, but things that kind of exist outside the legislature that we're addressing as legislators. So that's a little bit unique. And then also, it is an election year. So you're seeing, whether it's resolutions or bills, you'll see things that may be motivated by the fact that it is an election year.
Melissa with South Dakota Public Broadcasting. We've talked a lot about issues that are coming up. This week, there was one bill that is important to another group of individuals, Senate Bill 67 regarding vendors offering services for marriages. It was withdrawn. Discussion on the media indicated that it was due to a petition that was circulated. How often does that happen where a bill's withdrawn, and how important is it for the public to maintain a dialogue with their lawmakers?
Well, what you're talking about is a new rule that we actually just adopted in legislative procedures this year, and we adopted it not for that bill per se. It was interesting that the dynamics worked out the way they did, but there in the past have been bills that people have put in, and they're, oh gosh, I missed that was would eventually be ruled unconstitutional. You know, just didn't catch it, and okay, so instead of having to bring it to committee and go, you know, please table my bill because it's unconstitutional and I didn't catch that, this would solve that process that with the prime sponsor, both prime sponsors saying it was okay, they could pull that bill back. So I think that was a good addition to our rules that just, you know, saves time and et cetera. Certainly, you know, I don't know. I guess we'll see how that goes going forward. I can think of issues in the 12 years I've been here where we've gotten a lot of pressure, and maybe they would have withdrawn it. Maybe they would not have. So I don't know if there's anything specific about that particular bill as far as the content that instigated the sponsors to pull back on it. But I think the same could be argued for several bills in the past. So I overall, I think the rule is a good rule and leverages some opportunities for folks to, you know, give it a second chance.
I think a lot of times what happens is a legislator is responsive to a constituent or an interest group, and on its face, the bill may have some curb appeal and to that legislator and think, you know, this is worth having the debate. And then you get here, maybe it ends in the discussion phase with before the bill is even drafted. Sometimes it goes as far as a bill being drafted and dropped. Oftentimes it'll be in circulating the signature pages where a discussion will be created that you realize, oh, gee, I hadn't thought about that. Probably not a good time for it. And it's very frequent that you'll hear legislators get up and in committee and kill their own bill with the understanding that it needs more work for next year. I need to have a more vibrant dialogue really outside the legislature before this is ready to be debated in the legislature. And that happens not infrequently. And I believe that bill is probably no different. I'm sure a legislator had an idea, and it wasn't maybe fully vetted, and you get here and realize maybe it's not the appropriate time, maybe it's not the appropriate law. And I do like the new rule that allows you to withdraw that, but that happens fairly often.
Sure.
Nate with South Dakota Public Broadcasting, when you guys were I know you guys have mentioned a little bit about the waiver for Medicaid that the governor is going to write a letter to. Did he have discussion with lawmakers around this building about that? Did he talk to you guys as individuals about that? Maybe just kind of talk a little bit about what the general perspective of that is.
Yeah, you know, yes. The short answer is yes, very much. It's been a great dialogue. Again, trying to make sure that long term we are going to build a program that works for South Dakota. You know, certainly we don't need the federal government telling us how to do a program for South Dakota because we're different than New York or Washington. And so under that construct, we just have had many discussions about what we conceptually would like to see in a waiver if we move to that process. I mean, the letter really is the first step because the waiver process is actually a lengthy, arduous process to fill out all the paperwork, et cetera, only to be turned down. So the letter merely will outline some of our thoughts and ideas, what we'd like to see in a waiver for South Dakota. And yes, he had been very interactive with Representative Lust and myself in developing those concepts and ideas and things that we thought were important and things that he felt were important. So, yeah, to be fair to say, we had a great dialogue about it.
Yeah, very few would argue that being compelled to comply with a federal regulation is in the best interest of really any state. And it's especially so in this case where you've got, on the Affordable Care Act, the ability of those 100% to 138% of poverty to avail themselves of the exchanges. And yet the mandate is you have to expand to 138%. Clearly, that to me is unworkable from the beginning. But more importantly, and this has been expressed by Leader Rave and the minority leaders from both houses, the best alternative would be for South Dakota to be able to craft something that works for South Dakota, not a one-size-fits-all for every state, but something that addresses the unique characteristics of our state. When you look at our low unemployment, the dynamics of our economy, that flexibility, it just screams out to give states flexibility for that. And I think what the governor's doing is pursuing an appropriate path to give us that flexibility to tailor something that really gets at the heart of the issue and who needs that coverage and then that assistance. And I'm hopeful that we can get it granted and tailor a South Dakota resolution to what in my mind is a South Dakota problem.
Go ahead.
The legislative process can be overwhelming, you know, for citizens, and with so many bills, and, you know, most of the time it's the controversial ones that get the most press and everything. So what are some tips you guys have, you know, for constituents to stay informed on committee hearings and bills that really matter and will affect their everyday life, you know, like the road district bill that was debated yesterday, that, you know, those kind of smaller bills that people don't, you know, necessarily know about?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I often find myself thinking back to the way things would have been in the 80s and 70s and 60s prior to the advent of the internet and the access to what we're doing here. I it would have been very difficult for someone to stay apprised of what we're doing in those times. Today, where you've got a very good website for LRC, you can listen to every hearing, you can listen to every floor debate, very accessible process. So number one would be use the internet, use the tools we have to get the word out. But I think more importantly, to issues that are of special interest, relying on the internet and what's available, relying on the media, the folks, the role you guys play, but also relying on that special interest group, whether it's the municipalities or the counties or the nurses association, the dentists, you name it. There's always a special interest group who is watching every piece of legislation. And that would be the place, if you have an issue of particular interest, go there. If the internet isn't satisfying your needs, go to that group. And if it's the water districts, you would go to your maybe municipalities or the county association and find out what bills they're watching. That would be probably the second stop after the internet.
Yeah, I think, you know, and certainly we hold town meetings, Cracker Barrels in the communities. And, you know, I have noticed actually in the last few years, attendance has really gone up in my particular area. So that's positive for me to see folks come and engage us in discussions and get firsthand, oh, what's going on? And a lot of times, you know, we've resolved many issues. You just talk about it, go, oh, yeah, I guess I didn't know the whole story. Okay, great. And so, you know, I just strongly encourage people to do all of the things that that Leader Lust has talked about. Make sure that they're engaging. There are lots of tools out there and lots of resources that, you know, you folks help by just pushing the message out. And people get caught up in their everyday lives and they don't always worry about what we're doing out here. And so they need to. And it's important.
Yeah. Are there any questions from callers on the line?
All right. Well, thank you guys for coming to the press conference. We'll see you next Friday. It's 10 o'clock. So
thank you, guys.
Thanks.